or just for anything that comes up. Right now we're focusing on having the sleeping ban repealed. We'd also like a moratorium placed on the tickets, and we'd like to have campsites set up.
Okay.
And that's basically what we're aiming for. And Maria's also involved with me in that.
Have you gotten any reaction from the campus, from the chancellor and from the chancellor's office?
No, not currently. We're going through the process of becoming an organization, but we're having a lot of positive student input from it. A lot of people don't know this type of thing's going on, and you inform them of it, and they're like appalled that we could be ticketing people who, you know, asking money from people who don't have money to begin with. So it is very contradictory.
Okay. In the case with Linda Edwards, she got the $50 fine that was suspended. Has that been the procedure down the board?
Yeah, actually, there have been a couple cases with Linda Edwards that illustrate homeless problems. Our first case was a Greyhound Rock incident, but we can maybe mention that a little bit later. I wrote a little article in the Street Sheet called "The Constitution Visits Greyhound Rock." But the second case, the one that you're referring to, is the one that occupied the courts for several weeks, ultimately, and ultimately, the sentence was a $50 suspended fine. Another one of our defendants, Maria Leal, submitted a no-contest plea to one of the City Hall sleep-ins, and she was likewise given a $50 suspended fine. As a prediction, it would seem that at least in Judge Attuck's court, for the sleep-in demonstrations that have already occurred, I would expect him to come out with uniformity of sentence. However, I would caution that people should not commit new demonstrations that could be construed as civil disobedience with the expectation that that would necessarily be the continuing sentence. I would suspect that they might up the ante, and people should assume, as they always should, when something could be construed as civil disobedience, that they might have to pay a stiff penalty for it. And I say that partly because part of our argument for a lenient penalty, and I think one that Judge Attuck was very responsive to, was the idea that it was necessary to bring this case into court to test these theories, to test the for whether or not such demonstrations were in fact covered by the First Amendment. We've had our first answer from one judge on one state of facts in the Edwards case, and that answer was a negative one from our perspective. We certainly do intend to appeal Edwards to the next highest level. And furthermore, even as to Judge Attuck's courtroom, we have some other evidence that we hope to bring in the subsequent cases that I think may very well produce the opposite verdict from Judge Attuck himself because of some of the technical grounds upon which Judge Attuck based his decision. So I'll again defer that and come back to it later after other folks have had more of their say.
Okay. Robert, pardon me. Robert, you're the editor, I guess, of the Street Sheet. And you're also involved last week in what you consider a violation of your First Amendment rights. Could you go into that and explain that to us?
Yeah, as far as I know about it, the police apparently got an arrest warrant to pick me up for what's called false information, which in this case meant that my birth name, which is the name on my driver's license, but not the name that I customarily use and have used for the last 10 to 12 years, is not the same as my name in use. And they used this as what I regarded as a pretext for grabbing me right before the city council meeting and arresting me, seizing signs that I happened to be near to, but which were not mine, that were going to be used at the city council meeting, protest signs, such as sleep is innocent, ban sleeping, why not ban eating next, things of this sort.
Okay.
They held me for 48 hours, or 44 hours, actually. And then when I was finally allowed to come before a judge, considerably later than previously, I've been released on my own recognizance. They had arrested me at other city council meetings on other charges, which in their eyes, and not so much in mine, but I could see that they could have a legitimate sense. I was arrested for one case for disrupting an assembly in which we were simply trying to assert our right to speak and the mayor had cut short the time allowed people to discuss the issue. We felt that was unfair, and we continued to speak. Another occasion, they arrested me for sleeping outside the city council chambers, which was part of a sleep-in demonstration. And in both those instances, there was an issue that could be tried in court and will be tried in court. Those cases will be coming up. But in this case, false information, the charges were dismissed. It was used to hold me for an unusually long period of time, 44 hours. And there was a $2,000 bail set. And they gave out information to demonstrators at the time of the arrest that I was some kind of fraudulent person misrepresenting myself. It was, seemed to be an attempt to sow dissension among demonstrators and also to smear me before the public, which I hope will backfire because I intend to file a false arrest suit after making a claim to the city.
Okay.
Can I comment a little bit on that particular arrest of Roberts?
Certainly.
First of all, I want to say that I was not the attorney who represented Robert in connection with that arrest. Reed Shantz, a local attorney, did a very fine job. And the grounds upon which he was dismissed was a very appropriate ground that there was insufficient evidence to support the charge made under the that judgment was made by a deputy district attorney, Nguyen, who it was his first contact with the case, and as soon as he had an opportunity to evaluate both the police report and other materials that were available through the local press that Mr. Norris holds himself out as a Mr. Norris rather than by the name of his parents and has for a long time, did the obvious thing to do, drop the charges. What I would want to add to that is that that particular elementary lesson of what should be done is not new to Santa Cruz. It is well known. The most striking example that I can give right now is the case of another activist who I've had the privilege of representing in many occasions in this county and city, and that's of the feminist activist Nikki Craft, who has literally undergone hundreds and hundreds of arrests around the country and probably at least 15 or so or more in Santa Cruz County. She consistently uses a name by which she is known by everyone as Nikki Craft. However, the police and the courts are well aware that her birth name and her legal name was during this period of time Deborah Spray. Actually, she has since changed it legally, but that's all subsequent to Santa Cruz events. Police Chief Bassett, who helped to orchestrate the arrest in this particular case, knew that about Nikki Craft, knew that her name was Deborah Spray, or her, not her name, but her birth name was Deborah Spray. I find it extremely interesting and most disturbing that somebody whose public policy would be favored in Santa Cruz by the Santa Cruz City Council, such as Nikki Craft, and should be favored, that there would be no thought of prosecuting her for using a false name because she uses a name she's known by. But when you have a policy that is disfavored, such as agitation on behalf of the homeless, that suddenly now the so-called progressives and their allies start looking through for various forms of police repression that can be used to stifle this movement. That is dangerous. That is fascistic, regardless of what brand name it is superintended under.
Okay, thank you very much for that, Ray. We had a caller that apparently hung up. Please, if we're in the middle of a discussion, we're not going to cut in to talk to you, but please hold on and be patient and we'll get to you. Right about now, we have to do something that the FCC makes us do, and here we go.
Listen up, this is for your own good. The following program contains material of a sensitive, controversial, or sexual nature which may offend some members of the audience. The views expressed reflect those of the speaker only and do not necessarily reflect the opinions of KZSC or the UC Regents. Anyone who prefers not to hear this type of material should tune out KZSC for an indeterminate amount of time and join us later. Thank you very much.
Dreamed of riding horses, roping and herding cattle. Oh, how those brutes terrorized me when they saw my velvet saddle.
I would like to get with the sleep.
Okay, here we are. We're back again.
Specifically, the legal technical terms of life.
Okay. Once again, Maria, could you tell us about your case and what happened with you?
Okay. On October 12th, I believe it was, a city council meeting was on October 11th. We were arrested after midnight. We were given tickets, which is an infraction, and we chose to stay at town hall, and we were again accosted by the police and given a misdemeanor charge, which is that $1,000 fine or 6 months in jail. And we were then taken to the police station, where I had my most interesting experience with the
county jail.
Yeah, the county jail, and we're put in holding tanks, and these tiny little rooms, and there was five of us in there, and before we got in there, the police were trying to play mind games with us, and
How do you mean mind games?
Like right when we got in there, when they were searching us, and we had to take off our earrings and anything that might hurt something. The two policemen that were doing this had a conversation going on together, and it was basically to deter me from any further action that I might have with this homeless issue.
How was that? What was the conversation like?
Just saying things like, do you read the papers? And I'm all, yeah. And he says something in fact that, don't you know that the homeless people don't even want you out there? And making just remarks like that. And when I got in, I was kind of bummed about the whole situation. And I was just sitting there, and my friend who was with us at the time also came in and said that was exactly what they had just said to her. And they use those sort of tactics to deter us from protesting at any further time.
Okay, we've got a caller now. You're on the air with KZSC. Please tell us what you're thinking. Hello? Hello? Okay, apparently they weren't thinking much. if you're going to call, please call in. And if you've got a question, it's 429-4036. Please don't hang up. It's very upsetting. Okay, you can go ahead and continue then.
Well, we were released at 9 in the morning, at which time I think this was the first misdemeanor
sleeping arrest
ever, and there was four of us. Robert was with me, with another boy named John and Joanna Burton, and basically I feel that the city council has put this label homeless on these people, and they've almost forgotten that they are people, and there are basic human rights that these people need, and they're not living up to that.
Okay, we've got another caller. Let's see what this person has to say. Please don't hang up. Hello? Hello? Okay. Wow, this is very upsetting. Do you suppose it's the city council? Okay, Charles, could you tell us a bit about your involvement with the Santa Cruz homeless?
Well, okay, I was kind of pulled into the issue a couple of years ago when there was a vigil at the town clock and a sleep-in, and at that time I was involved in projects related to Central America, and I only participated for a brief time, and though I slept overnight at the town clock, I wasn't arrested on that occasion. And then when some of the homeless folks, and especially Robert Norse, began organizing this past summer, why, the issue, which has always been kind of close to my heart, because I think it's a basic right that people have to sleep, and to sleep in the locality of their choice. You know, I mean, it seems to me there's absolutely no justification for saying that people should go elsewhere. If they choose to live here, that's their right as a human being. And so that's kind of my basic position, is that is simply an interest in the human rights of all citizens. And so anyway, I got drawn into kind of a peripheral role at the present time, where I, part of the time, I'm able to help out in some way or other. And I did participate in a sleep-in and was arrested at the same one where Linda Edwards was arrested, in essentially the same situation. And I have a court date coming up this
this coming Monday, and I think I'm going to defend myself, and partly the reason for that is, much as I appreciate the brilliant briefs of Ray here, and the way he conducted the Linda Edwards case, I would like to bring up some things that in the court, if it's possible, bring up some things that, because I'm defending myself, might be a little more possible to bring up than when an attorney is defending me. And for example, I'm interested in what's called a necessity defense. A necessity defense is one where you say that you risked arrest for possible violation of a law in order to prevent a more serious crime from being committed. And in my view, the continued harassment of homeless people is a serious human rights crime. And it was that I was trying to stop by participating in a sleep-in, with the idea that an aroused public would put pressure on the city council and would stop this kind of harassment and deprivation of sleep that is involved in the harassment. So anyway, I would like to present that kind of a defense. Just how far I will get with that is unknown, but the another aspect of my defense is based on the Nuremberg principles, or actually the same defense is based on the Nuremberg principles, which held that citizens could be held accountable in situations where crimes against humanity were taking place and they did nothing to stop those crimes. And so I don't want to be considered complicit in the violation of human rights. As a citizen of Santa Cruz, that it may seem like kind of a long stretch of the concept of the Nuremberg principles, but to me it's a extension of the Nuremberg principles that should be put forward, just as in the case where people who have tried to stop the development of nuclear weapons and to stop the first strike systems have used the Nuremberg principles, an extension, the idea that no citizen should allow such crimes to continue.
Okay, thank you very much. And we've got a caller. Please tell us what you're thinking. Hello.
Hi.
Hello?
Hello?
Hello. Okay. Okay, go ahead.
Okay.
All right, we've been hung up on yet again.
Maybe a studio problem.
Good gosh.
Oh.
Okay. That was
sort of an error.
Please, if you're going to call in, please talk to us. It's very upsetting.
conspiracy.
It very well could be.
If they don't talk to us, we'll just keep talking to them. That'll be their punishment.
Please, call in. It's 429-4036. If you have anything constructive to say, or anything destructive to say, just if you have something to say, this is your chance to air your opinion. Okay. I understand that one of the main stumbling blocks for the homeless activists are the store owners on the Pacific Art Mall. Who has to say anything on that?
We haven't heard much from the store owners lately. They're kind of a shadow force. In other words, you talk to city council members on the rare occasions when they consent to talk to us. Looks like you got a call coming in. Maybe you should grab it.
Okay.
Talk to this question
later. All right. Please talk to us. Don't hang up. Hello.
Hi.
Hi.
Betsy, I live in Santa Cruz, and I just happened to hear your program. And I guess I'm not going to be a positive call, but I just wanted to say that I do not support sleeping. I have relatives that live in Ocean Street, and homeless people are sleeping and camping out there, and it's dangerous. They leave their trash and their, you know, human deposits everywhere. And
everywhere?
Well, you know, I mean, where they shouldn't be. You know, when you're taking a walk and you see toilet paper and trash and garbage, and you see people sleeping, and it's scary, you can't walk where you want to walk, you know, down the road, and they're walking around at night. And, you know, I know that there's people that are mentally ill and people that need help, and I support helping those people. But I don't think allowing people to sleep in the streets or sleep, you know, maybe have a camp or something, but I don't think legalizing sleeping is just the way to do it.
Okay. Well, how many would you estimate are mentally ill?
Probably 50% looking downtown when you walk down the mall. A lot of them seem like they're kind of out of it. But I don't, those people need help, but I don't think, you know, legalizing sleeping is the way to do it because I don't want to see people sleeping on the streets.
Okay, stay on the line and we'll get to that. Who wants to answer that?
Well, I just want to say that I can respect your opinion as a person who does reside in Santa Cruz. However, I feel that, you know, the homeless people, I notice a lot when you're talking, you keep saying they. It's kind of like separating them from us. And they're not separate from us. They are human beings. And I think that a lot of the fear that is bred among people is from ignorance of the homeless. There's a lot of misconceptions. Just because there are people on the streets doesn't necessarily mean they're going to harass you or anything like that.
Well, you know, I have been harassed. And, you know, I have been harassed before. Every time you walk down the mall, those people want to give you the pamphlets and you say you're not interested and they call you names.
Mm-hmm.
And they yell at you like, you know, you're too good for us. And that's not it at all. I don't want to support the band. And they've asked me when you walk down the mall, you know, we're always getting asked by the band. They always yell at you and things like that. And I'm an open-minded person, but I sit down Ocean Street, you go down there and you see people walking around late at night and they're not wholesome people. A lot of them are, and I do know that they're people, and I'm not making them an ambiguous term or, you know, separating them from myself, but I do think that I do not like it, and I don't think it's safe, and I don't think it's good, and I think, you know, I pay for my house, and I pay my property taxes, and I think I should be able to, when I own my property, I shouldn't have to walk down the street and see a bunch of people leaving their trash and living in my backyard. And I don't want to have to walk down the street at night and worry that I'm going to get attacked. And there have been people that have been attacked on my street, and it's a very serious problem. And if you don't have to live with it, it's different. But, you know, it's a bad area down there at night.
Well, that's why we want to try to...
down there will tell you the same thing.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's why we're trying to establish some kind of campsites for the problem.
That's all I wanted to say, is just that... You know, I don't think it's fair to throw people, you know, just disregard people because they're not the norm of society or because they
mm-hmm.
don't match what we think they should be. But I don't think it's fair just because somebody, even the ones that are meant to chooses to live like that, should be allowed to just sleep wherever they want and impose their choice of lifestyle on other people. And I think that's what I don't like about it, okay?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Sure, thank you.
Okay, well,
respond to that, David.
Okay,
actually, I think Ray wanted to say something.
Well, actually, I have a much longer response, which I would like to give later, but let me say that I very much welcome that call, not only because it was somebody who was able to get through, and I see there's somebody else trying to get through right now, but it did address the problem.
Please hold on, caller.
Sure.
Please hold on.
Yeah. It brought up some issues and some problems that we cannot go into a denial posture on and just sweep under the rug, and... I would like to be able to address some of the particulars that she was talking about
after
this call.
Okay. Please call or talk to us and tell us what you're thinking. You're on Hearing Voices. Hello.
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 I wanted to disagree with the last caller. I can sympathize with her feelings about wanting to feel protected or secure. I understand some of those fears that become... that get there because of people being around late at night, and it's sort of an unusual thing for people to be seeing. But in many parts of the world, people are sleeping in doorways all the time. When I lived in Calcutta for a short time, it was commonplace to see people sleeping everywhere. Not that we should try to duplicate what they're doing in Calcutta, but to some extent that's going on as the lines get drawn between those who have and those don't. There's an increasing amount of poverty in this country. And more of those symptoms of that are really apparent in countries like India and like in Calcutta, they're starting to become apparent here too, because we have not honored a value that we are together in this economy and we're together in this society and that we owe a responsibility to one another to make it work for everyone. Instead, what we've done is we've accepted the basic premise that I don't want to see those people. Like somehow we're exclusively placing ourselves in a position of deciding other people's fate.
Actually, that brings to mind the situation in San Francisco, where there were protests to the food giveaways in the park, down the street on Haight, and one woman complained saying that she didn't want her kids having to see homeless people get food for free.
Well, that's part of the problem. It represents a lack of holding certain values dear among us, and one of them is that people, everyone, deserves a place to have a place to sleep that's warm and comfortable. They're never going to be able to reach any form of personal esteem or employability or anything if they're still, you know, worn out from walking around all night because they can't find places to sleep or nothing's been set aside for them. And whether it's in Santa Cruz or anywhere in the country, if we don't start providing homes for people who are being displaced because they lose their jobs or their houses get foreclosed or whatever, and this situation certainly is going to get worse as we start to deal with some of the economics of the next few years, the problem is going to get much worse. And so people who are screaming and complaining now should really get it figured out in their head that there's something else going to have to be done here besides complaining and whining about people who are homeless in their street. They're going to have to deal in a really fundamental way with the whole problem of homelessness and how it's coming about through our economics. And in some countries, like in South Africa, they deal with the problem by putting them in bantustans or putting them in this country in ghettos. Now, we have chosen to deal with the problem like that in the past, and I suppose that to some extent that's what they're suggesting now by putting these camps or whatever out so that at least people have a place to stay that they're out of view. Now, I can sympathize with the business community in the sense that it doesn't provide a very attractive sort of environment for shopping and that kind of thing to have so many people homeless walking the streets downtown. But at the same time, we really have to take a deeper look at what's going on here and not just kind of have knee-jerk reaction to the problem. And as much as I've supported the city council and some of the progressive things that they have done, they have really fallen down when it comes to this whole problem of dealing with the homelessness. They've certainly done more than most communities, and they're to be applauded for that. But in general, their whole attitude about the homelessness problem, I guess, recognizes that it's a much deeper problem than they can handle on a local level without more funds. I suppose that's part of it, but there certainly could be given more support towards trying to come up with some solution that's going to at least give people a place to sleep.
Okay, caller. Thank you for your opinions.
All right,
thank you. Okay, we're going to take a short break now, and then we're going to address some of the things that that caller just brought up. Remember, you're listening to Hearing Voices. Okay, we've got another caller, but we're going to take a short break now. So you can hold on or you can call back. It's only going to be about 2.5 minutes or so. So you are listening to Hearing Voices on KZSC in Santa Cruz, 88.1 at the far left of your dial.
Thank you.
Okay, you're listening to Hearing Voices. They brought up the camping sites. Does anyone want to address that?
And they also brought up the previous caller brought up the problem of what do you do with human waste and litter and the problem of privacy and bizarre-looking people suddenly in your way and weirdos at tables yelling out take pamphlets and so forth. I usually have a quick response to that, and maybe too quick, in that you don't need a sleeping law to deal with a littering problem. You don't need a sleeping law to deal with a sanitation problem. There are laws that say if somebody is crapping on your front doorstep, you can do something about it. If somebody is sleeping on your front doorstep, for that matter, that's trespass. And if somebody is blocking the sidewalk, there's an ordinance for that. That's obstructing the sidewalk. What you don't want to have, or at least what I don't want to have, is a broad-based ordinance for harassing people to sleep anywhere and everywhere in the city. Conceivably, and we're thinking of proposing this to the city council, part of the city could be zoned for not sleeping. It could be neighborhoods such as the neighborhood Betsy lives in. Perhaps there people are particularly sensitive. They don't want to see people sleeping. Then there could be other areas where people could sleep. Now, frankly, temperamentally, I favor Charles' position, which is if somebody has to sleep and is not doing anything other than sleeping, you shouldn't penalize them for that alone. And that's what this law, the 6.36010 does. It is a so-called camping ban that's actually a sleeping ban. So in response to Betsy, I'd say you don't have to favor this keeping the sleeping ban in order to make sure that people don't litter the area or sleep on your property. That's a myth that's been spread by the city council. Several times Mike Rotkin and John Laird have misstated our position that we want people to be able to sleep in the streets. No, I don't think particularly I want people to be able to sleep in the streets. I just don't think people should be arrested for sleeping in Santa Cruz just for that reason alone. If you're sleeping in the streets, you're obstructing something usually, and that's the basis for a policeman asking you to move along and go somewhere else.
It seemed to me that both callers were potential allies for you, mm-hmm. because the first caller, she said she wanted she wanted some kind of a campsite, some place where, you know, out of sight, out of mind could happen. And the second caller, you know, was an avid proponent of camping sites.
Did I say something about that?
Certainly.
Out of sight, out of mind point. I think a lot of people feel that way. And whenever we have a large group of people that somehow are viewed as a problem to other folks, one of their ways of solving the problem is trying to get them out of sight. And that itself is a really sad way of resolving the value, whatever value conflicts are involved. And because we put people out of sight by putting them in prison, we put people out of sight by sticking them in mental hospitals. And now there would be some forms of campgrounds which would do that same thing. And actually, I feel that the homeless people congregating on the mall, if it wasn't for the fact that they congregated on the mall, this town would probably never face the problem and do something about it. So I'm not really in favor of solutions that put people out of sight. And I'm hoping that if campsites are designated, that they will not have that effect, and that there will be enough of them so that people can even choose the neighborhoods they wish to sleep in, not be put in just one single kind of a ghetto.
Okay, we have a caller on the line. Hello, caller.
Yes, Sentinel here. First of all, I just want to say I'm very sympathetic to the cause here, the situation. What are your concerns regarding the possibility of a sudden increase or migrant population of the homeless if such a campsite were to be established in the area? I'm not not implying that more people would take advantage, so to speak, and quit their jobs and go out and live in this campsite, but is it not, in a sense, provoking more of a sense of freedom to not do what I guess we're trying to impose upon homeless people by not doing something like that? What are your concerns as far as people taking advantage of something like that? I do remember what happened in Los Angeles recently, in the last couple of years, the big city that they erected down there, and the cops came in and tore it all down. I mean, that was tragic, but do you foresee something like that possibly happening? Do you intend to get absolutely every foreseeable loophole, legal and otherwise, out of the way so that absolutely nothing could get in the way of this?
Anyone?
My thought is, usually, again, I've had, this question's been asked me before, and I haven't done an extensive survey of areas that have changed their laws and then seen what the results have been. A frequent argument is there will be a magnet effect. Oh, if we treat people fairly, everybody will come here, you know, this sort of thing. There have been two cases. One is in San Francisco, where there has been a policy for many years of letting people sleep in their vehicles, which was suddenly changed in January due to the police attempt to embarrass the new mayor, Art Agnos. After that, the mayor responded by declaring a moratorium on the enforcement of the law officially. The law stated you can't sleep in your vehicle or eat in your vehicle after 10 o'clock at night, between 10 and 6 in the morning, or you get a misdemeanor ticket, which is a $1,000 fine, 6 months in jail, such as Maria and I are facing here for sleeping. But what happened then was there was an association that formed called the Vehicular Residents Association to defend the rights of people.
Oh, golly. It appears that our phoner hung up.
Oh, okay. Should I continue?
Please.
Sure. Yeah. This association attempted to defend the rights of people in their vehicles, and they did a survey, and they found that 2 months, perhaps it was one month or 2 months after the moratorium was officially declared on the enforcement of the law, so that San Francisco was free for people who lived in their vehicles, the number of vehicles that were in the city and in the Haight area had increased by a grand total of one. One vehicle had arrived. In Santa Barbara in 1986, there was a change in the sleeping law there. A very conservative city council refused any kind of dialogue with homeless activists, and homeless activists were being arrested nightly for sleeping in or alternately for walking around and then collapsing and being taken to hospitals. It was a much more militant movement than our movement is here. The city council responded with constant denials. Finally, there was a nationwide call to the homeless to come to Santa Barbara by Mitch Snyder's organization. And 2 weeks before the date for the homeless to arrive, the city council capitulated there and said, fine, we'll change the law. They changed the sleeping law. They liberalized it considerably, so busts are down 75% as of this year, according to a conversation I had with one of the attorneys down there. His name is Will Hastings. And they found no appreciable increase, according to him, in people coming into the city. So in Santa Barbara, which is somewhat closer to a larger area, I mean, you have a huge area, Los Angeles, and down there, if it's a mecca, this kind of change in the law did not produce that kind of response there, nor did it produce such a response in San Francisco among van dwellers. Now, who knows? One can't say what would happen here. It's a different situation. Santa Cruz is unique. But I think that the argument should have to be made that this is really going to happen. And I think an experimental period where the ban is lifted in a part of the city would be a way to try it out. I mean, if you see a huge number of people coming to town, then that will be a problem that will have to be faced. But I don't anticipate that myself.
I'd like to respond to it a somewhat different way, although I'm supporting what Robert Nurse is saying. It seems to me that whenever the appropriate question or challenge or inquiry is made as to what is going to be the cost of doing the right thing, and oftentimes we have horrendous potential consequences laid out as if you do the morally correct thing, then such and such will happen, and we certainly can't have that. One is to put it in the perspective of real facts and experience, as Robert has, and say, well, no, wait a second, those concerns have been largely exaggerated or do not materialize when put in practice. But the other response I think we need to make, and I think we need to be very, very clear about this, both as individual human beings with consciences and as a community, is that we cannot guarantee that doing the right thing will always come for free. There has to come a point where you do the right thing because it has to be done, and where you will be moral because that's the kind of person or community you choose to be. And if problems arise out of that, then rather than going back to the idea of, no, well, we better go back and persecute people so we don't end up with these problems, it seems to me that the more human approach is to say, if trying to become moral about a situation means that problems are created, then let's address those problems in turn. I've used the phrase that we should become a magnet. We should become a moral magnet. We should go ahead and try solving these problems at a human level, and if that compounds certain difficulties, then let us celebrate the fact that we get to then explore the next stage of becoming moral human beings. We have just witnessed the kind of escapism of the Dukakis campaign, where clearly the preferable to two sides tries to avoid all moral questions at virtually all costs, and it's a defeatist approach to life. It's a defeatist approach to public policy. It just constantly gives more and more to the forces of nihilism, and we cannot afford that. So I would say let's do what we must do, and if complications there be, then let's address those next, and we'll have to have the goodwill of all the people to work on that, including all the callers that have come in so far. I don't want to be polarizing or categorizing them into good and bad people. I think we can make use of the positive parts of all these calls.
Okay. One of the sites that has been speculated on for a camping area, should anyone allow that to happen, is up here on campus at UCSC. Would either Maria or Jenny like to answer that and see what has happened with campus administration?
Well, I think it'd be a really good idea since we do have a lot of open land that could be available. However, I really don't know how practical, or in a sense I think it might be a little bit idealistic, because I honestly don't think that the chancellor is going to just give land that readily, because you have to keep in mind that, you know, living in society we are living in, that in a sense we're trying to sell the campus, and that might be somebody might look at people sleeping out there and just be totally turned off. So I don't know what his viewpoints are on that, but that's one of them that I'm looking at, that he might, that might be a feeling that will come from that. I think it's an excellent idea. However, I would really have to sit down and speak with the chancellor about it, which hasn't been done at this point.
Okay, there is a...
something about that?
Sure. I was just going to say that there is a fairly large number of students living in the woods.
In the woods, yes.
43, I hear, something like that.
I'm not sure of the numbers, but I do know people do live out in the woods.
All right, we've got a phone call. You're listening to Hearing Voices. We're talking about the homeless issues in Santa Cruz. Please tell us what you're thinking. Hello.
Good early afternoon. There's one question I wanted to ask. But generally in the continental United States, per se, is if you go back, maybe looking back the last 25 years, it seems to have multiplied to an alarming degree. And I was wondering, what do you have any statistics about that, any information about that?
Well, I know that the homeless issue is the second largest national problem that America faces, right underneath the deficit.
How much has it increased maybe over the last two decades? It seems to me, I'm not an expert on this or anything, but from my memories, I'm 37, going back over the last 20 years, that it's increased a lot in the state of California.
I could say something about that more nationally. I think 2 decades ago, there was very little homelessness in the United States. And three or four decades ago, the poor could shelter themselves because we hadn't saddled ourselves with the oppression of the building codes that intimidates people and prevents them from sheltering themselves when they are unable to find shelter in the regular marketplace.
Another thing that I'd like to bring up is the fact that there are the prices of real estate in many areas seem to be artificially inflated, because if you buy a house in many parts of California, your mortgage payments, your cost of mortgage, taxes, and insurance are going to exceed the level that you are, the income that you are likely to be able to rent it out for. If you can manage to buy a house at this time today. And on that point, something should be done or speeded up in a legislative process to make, really inexpensive housing available to these people. There should be a lot of creative things that could be done if it legally were allowed. I'll get off now. Thank you.
I'd like to make a response to some of the historical perspectives the last caller brought in. And starting with the perspective that the so-called homeless are really not all of one stereotype, but that is composed of many, many different kinds of populations, is something that we're all aware of in this room, certainly. But let me address some of the kinds of populations that are included and how they've been differently impacted upon in an historical perspective. Let's start off with a significant component of the mentally ill. During the 1960s, there was a coalition between liberal viewpoints, and here I'm including genuinely liberal and also as part of that libertarian kinds of concepts, of people who were offended by a lot of the abuses of psychiatric institutionalization and warehousing of many, many people in the large state hospitals with poor levels of care and that did not need to be so institutionalized. Coalition between them and some fiscal conservatives, including Ronald Reagan when he was governor of the state of California. And so at that time, there was a social and political movement that met with a good deal of success, and it carried forth also into the 70s, to deinstitutionalize the mentally ill from the large warehousing kind of state hospitals. That was sold, for example, in California under the Short Doyle legislation of 1966, a very enlightened piece of legislation that then-Governor Ronald Reagan signed. And it was coupled with the idea of providing lots of local program supports for these people. So we'd get them out of the hospital, into the community, and with the appropriate supports that would make it feasible and not an undue burden on the community and also add quality to their lives. Well, Reagan accomplished the first part of deinstitutionalizing from the mental hospitals, and then he yanked the rug out from under the local services. And so then we had, for example, mental illness ghettos like the area around San Jose State College, which became like a schizophrenic ghetto in a lot of ways. And that contributed dramatically to the homeless problem, and it has increased over the years. That's one facet. A second facet is that with, particularly during the Reagan era, but also preceding the Reagan era, we have had a cutback in welfare programs and welfare support programs. I heard a statistic the other day regarding, I don't know whether it was Medicare or Medi-Cal, but it's true of benefit programs across the board. Apparently, of all the applications that were denied, an audit was done, only 26% of those applications were legally denied, under where the people were ineligible, even under the stingy, niggardly regulations that we now have, which under the state and federal regulations, that 3/4 of the people that are denied welfare are people who are eligible even under their own standards. Many of those people, including oftentimes women with children, will end up literally out on the streets or out in the woods because they cannot find, they cannot get the benefit checks to which they're entitled and have to scramble in other ways. And with this hostility toward the poor and the hostility with which many of the welfare programs are administered, both for on SSI and the Social Security programs, AFDC, general assistance, we've been going backwards, and that's been increasing the problem on homeless. And then thirdly, as the caller pointed out, the scene on real estate has been tailored primarily for the speculators, as well as, of course, there are environmental stresses. So these are some of the historical inputs that we have to treat and deal with. And but this city council that we've been experiencing in the last 2 years has been acknowledging some of this, but what they justify their persecution of the poor in Santa Cruz by saying, well, there are these larger causes, and therefore we can't do anything about it until the larger picture, that is Congress, starts doing something about their part of the house. Well, that's true. The problem will not be solved until it's solved in the larger part. But that is no excuse for aggravating the persecution of those who are within our community, who are suffering from that larger picture, as well as from the smaller picture that's been visited upon us by this past city council.
Well, our first caller said that she estimated that about half of the homeless in Santa Cruz are mentally disturbed. And President-elect, God help us all, George Bush, said that he said in one of his speeches that most of the homeless are mentally ill. Robert, as far as you know, how many of the homeless that you personally know, how many would you say, how many would you estimate are mentally disturbed?
Well, again, that's kind of a phrase that I don't to put too much stock in. I think people, you know, have different approaches, different lifestyles, and some people are disabled in some senses. I would estimate people I regard as real weird or hypersensitive or kind of autistic or something like that, and the way they approach me, I'd say it's a relatively small minority. I'd say no more than 20 or 30% at most is my feeling. Again, a lot of people who perhaps others would regard as wild and crazy, I mean, they work on the table, for example. And they, I think there's a higher percentage of people who are drunks than there are people who are mentally disturbed in the sense of people I regard as impossible to work with because they won't talk to me or they won't communicate. Actually, you find the more you're out on the streets, the more people will talk to you. And because they become familiar with you, you become familiar with them. They might not like you, and you might not like them, but you establish a working basis of communication. I think this fear of that people have going downtown, that Betsy talks about, and the fear that's trumpeted about there being a huge problem, the business problem you were talking about before, that the number of conservative candidates for city council use this excuse or this claim that they're going to clean up the mall by removing the street people or by enforcing the law, or in Randall Kane's case, by reinstituting certain discredited policies from the German government of the 30s. Perhaps he was misquoted on this. This whole approach, I think, misses the point. I mean, the point is the problem that the downtown business businesses concern things like high prices, appealing to a different market than the local market. I mean, you can't get I continue to repeat this when people ask me this, but you can't get a decent salad bar there, whereas out in 41st Avenue you can get a huge salad, all you can eat, for $3 or $4. It's parking problems, stuff like that.
You have a caller?
I see you have a caller.
Caller?
I don't I regard that as largely a blind. I mean, you know, business people have legitimate concerns about their businesses, and I think businesses could work with people on the streets. In some cases, they're just afraid to. I mean, I've talked to business owners who just, they had one or two bad experiences, and they do not want to subject themselves to any further contacts. But, I mean, you know, America is not a Disneyland shopping mall. It is a real community of people with real problems, and those are going to spill out probably more and more in the years ahead. And they have to be dealt with on a human basis. And I think one of the things in the petition for homeless rights, a petition given to the city council in June that they have not responded to, even though there are thousands of signatures from local people on it, is to urge that a committee, an arbitration committee, be put together to deal with problems between business people and street people on a non-coercive basis. Rather than calling the police, there should be some kind of mediating agency, as, for example, we have a mediating agency for rent problems.
Okay. Once again, you're listening to Hearing Voices. We're talking about the rights of the homeless and homeless activism in Santa Cruz. You're listening to KZSC Santa Cruz, and I'm Dave, and we have to fill you in on some news because the FCC makes us. Okay, Bethany College in Scotts Valley will present the play Tartuffe on November 10th, 11th, and 12th. Oh, good grief. Okay, caller, sorry we didn't get to you immediately, but you can call back. Bethany College in Scotts Valley will present the play Tartuffe on November 10th, 11th, and 12th, which means you can catch it tonight and tomorrow night, and then again next weekend, the 17th, 18th, and 19th at the Bethany Theater, 800 Bethany Drive. In Scotts Valley. How many times did they say Bethany in that? This hilarious 17th century comedy about a religious hypocrite who's only in it for the bucks, is as timely and funny today as it was in the court of Louis XIV. You'll never forgive yourself if you miss Tartuffe. For more information and for reservations, call 438-3800. And yet another bit of news. The Art Center Theater is available for rental for production or special events. Santa Cruz County Actors Theater manages this comfortable, well-equipped 97-seat playhouse. Please keep us in mind for recitals, lectures, meetings, or special performances. For more information, call 425-7529. Okay, once again, you're listening to Hearing Voices. We have a caller on the line, but first the FCC makes us do this as well.
Listen up, this is for your own good. The following program contains material of a sensitive, controversial, or sexual nature which may offend some members of the audience. The views expressed reflect those of the speaker only and do not necessarily reflect the opinions of KZSC or the UC Regents. Anyone who prefers not to hear this type of material should tune out KZSC for an indeterminate amount of time and join us later. Thank you very much.
Dreamed of riding horses, roping and herding cats.
Okay, once again, you're listening to Hearing Voices, and this is KZSC 88.1 on your FM dial. And I'd like to invite you to stick around for Down by Law following this. Okay, we have a caller that we have to get to, and you're on Hearing Voices. Please tell us what you're thinking. Hello.
Hello, yes.
Yo.
Big issue. It seems like in a town that projects itself as progressive, and with the university right here, that some really creative solutions could come about. And it's really kind of funny that isn't happening. You know, there's what's disturbing on one level is the choice that the people have made with Bush, and this kind of mandate of punishing those that don't have, and what appears to be following the same mandate in Santa Cruz with a police action. It's really sad because it's not a problem. It's like a tumor, having a tumor on your body and just thinking that if you forget about it or something, it will go away, rather than really dealing with it. And it seems to be the prevalent social and political attitude in this country, which growing up through the Christian kind of the, you know, the armchair compassion that's what's really practiced in this country, rather than, you know, the actual following through of Christian principles, which means, you know, sharing with those that have less, and you know, under the leaves of Yeats, you know, things like that that are supposedly, you know, the keystones of Christianity. And yet, in fact, it was this Christian nation, it's like, you know, push them aside. They're, you know, they're not us. Get them out of the way. We don't, you know, put them in jail, whatever. It's so, as someone on the panel mentioned, they're completely self-defeating, because it's only increasing as people ignore this issue and don't deal with it. And so it ups the ante to the point where eventually there'll be so many homeless people that there'll be no other choice than a kind of a violent revolution, which it seems like the stupidest people are the rich people, you know, because they have, I mean, they have so much, you know, and I guess they're so obsessed with hoarding everything and thinking that that's some kind of safety or security. What if they just had, you know, used a little bit of imagination or creative intelligence, they would see that by sharing with others and helping others, they're helping themselves, and they could still have their, you know, fancy cars and clothes and champagne dinners. And just, you know, I mean, that's maybe why the 10% you know, sharing thing has come down to a lot of religions. It's just sharing a portion, and then everyone gets fed and clothed. And it's really appalling to hear people in this country look down on people that are less fortunate than them, or label them as mentally ill. I mean, what does that really mean? Who isn't mentally ill on some level, or mentally disturbed, or emotionally disturbed? I mean, you know, I mean, and why are they that way? You know, it's you know, they're less fortunate circumstances or whatever. And it seems like without any real, genuine leadership in this country, you know, kind of along the lines that Jackson was offering or putting forth, there's nothing coming from the top or whatever to lead in this direction. So it just kind of polarizes in this punishment way, and it's just. It's really bad. I don't. It stymies me how you know, in this town particularly, that people call themselves progressive and yet just want to brush it aside. I don't understand. Maybe someone there can help me.
Okay.
I'd like to comment on that. I appreciate the values that this last caller expressed. I feel much the same way myself. I feel that one of the reasons for this polarization is partly because of the increasing gap between the rich and the poor economically, so that the rich simply have no comprehension for what it's like to be poor. And so they begin to view the poor as somehow less than human. And I think in this town, folks in the community who have some apprehension, who have kind of accepted some of the stereotypes about the homeless, might challenge themselves to get acquainted with some of the homeless folks. It's not hard to do, because there are usually homeless people on the mall, and they're often quite happy to talk. And I think getting acquainted is a way of overcoming some of the fear that is so much a part of this problem. And until that fear is, until we as individuals kind of deal with that fear, why, I think the community is not going to take appropriate action. I think there are a lot of creative possibilities, and once the fear is overcome, I think those creative possibilities will become apparent.
Okay. I think the caller touched on the progressiveness of the city and the city council, and earlier a caller said that the city council has done something, but they haven't gone far enough. Would anyone like to express an opinion on that?
I'd like to do some follow-up about my comment that certain actions of the city were fascistic, and I have reason to believe that city council was involved in that. And I want to make a distinction so it's not just getting off into rhetoric. When I label an action as fascistic, I am not labeling everybody behind that action as being a fascist. I think that the progressives in our city council, our past city council, and a lot of other progressives in this community are really, by and large, very fine people. And I've, and for example, people like Mike Rotkin, whom I'm extremely critical of in this context, I have known as as a really fine person in a lot of ways. In fact, indeed, I've had the privilege of having him as a client at one point. So I want to make a distinction, first of all, between labeling actions and effects of programs on the one hand versus how we deal with people on the other hand. And I don't think that we are well served by polarizing the community into those people who are somehow heroes and those people who are somehow villains. I do think, however, that we need a militancy on the issues, and that it is not going to be well served by just trying to have people look the other way. And so, for example, to illustrate some of this militancy, the last person said that the last caller said the stupidest people are the rich. I totally disagree with that statement. I think the stupidest people are those of us in the society at large who allow them to remain rich. What the rich people, by and large, are aware of their cleverness, at least in the short run, and that short run may be at least several decades, if not centuries, is that we constantly fawn at the fantasy that we could somehow be rich too. All we have to do is win the lottery or get through some get rich quick scheme or another, and then we can be part of the elite. And because we have that fantasy, we buy into the idea that it's okay for the world to be ruled by rich people. And that is nonsense, but it's worked, and it'll continue working until we decide that life is really about more important things than gathering wealth and baubles, and that we have each other to work with and ourselves and our self-respect, and we can get around to solving these problems. Now, so that's one thing. I have more I want to go off on, but I think I should let some of the other people say some things.
Well, just for our listeners' benefit, could we all introduce ourselves again? I'm Dave, and I'm the host of the show.
I'm Robert. I'm a homeless activist and the proud author of the Petition for Homeless Rights.
I'm Ray Grunijk. I'm, as introduced by Robert, one of the local shysters, and I've had the privilege of representing many homeless in the courtroom.
Okay, I'm Jenny Kenley, and I go to school here at Santa Cruz, and right now I'm trying to form an organization, Student Alliance for the Homeless, on campus.
And I'm Maria Aldoretti, and I also am a part of the Student Alliance for the Homeless.
I'm Charles Gray. I'm one of the defendants in the cases in the courts around the sleeping ban.
Okay.
I wanted to just make a comment. I think Ray's got some important things to say. I just want to butt in briefly in response to your question, which was about what has the city council been doing, or what exactly was your question again? It was
what have they done and what haven't they done?
What have they done? Well, actually, it's hard for me to give a totally fair and knowledgeable assessment of what they have and haven't done, because I have been pretty much focusing on the abuses that they have been permitting and endorsing, namely arresting people for sleeping after 11 o'clock at night in the city, where it is currently illegal everywhere in the city, without exception if you are outside of a house or hotel, to sleep, even on your own property or in your own vehicle. This is the absurdity that we continue to try to change with the kinds of demonstrations we've been doing and sleep-ins we've been doing, because ordinary representations to the city council have no effect. We have urged them to deal with a petition on the matter, and they have declined to even take up the petition formally. We presented them with the petition in June, as I mentioned before. Since, we have gathered thousands more signatures on this petition, urging essentially that they make a minor change, that they allow people to sleep in their vehicles in the city limits unless there is a complaint. I actually believe people should be allowed to sleep
wherever, provided they're not a public nuisance. That's an important proviso, but provided they're not a public nuisance, and provided they're not littering, provided there isn't some other crime in progress. But the petition that we presented to the City Council was a very limited thing. It just asked that the City Council consider changing the law regarding sleeping in your car. Their own Human Relations Task Force, a group that they had appointed a year and a half ago, presented them with a report. The task force was headed by Jane Yokoyama, who has recently been the top vote-getter elected in the City Council. She's a new City Council member. They gave her 3 minutes of discussion and voted her down. This is a progressive majority. Progressive City Council at the time, they had a majority of 4, and they now have a majority of 5. And it remains to be seen whether the new candidates, Mo Reisch, Don Lane, and Jane Yokoyama, as well as the former mayor, John Mahaney, who's a conservative, will be willing to take some action on changing this crazy sleeping ban. During their campaigns, they made some positive statements. Mo Reisch said, for instance, that he favored a moratorium on ticketing until the issue could be dealt with. That is, they favored ending the practice of ticketing people for sleeping, at least for a period of time while the issue could be worked out, provided, he said, that demonstrators did not raise their voices in raucous and alienating ways at the City Council. He was particularly concerned about the mayor being called nasty names and homophobic names at that, which I don't particularly support, but I feel that compared to the issue of harassing someone for sleep, it's a rather... It pales in comparison. If you're arresting people for sleeping every night, you naturally should expect a few nasty names to appear at the City Council one time or another. In fact, you'd have a sedated citizenry if they didn't. Anyway, Reisch proposed this, that there be this change. Jane Yokoyama has proposed that there be that a solution be implemented of some sort, such as opening the National Armory, which is I wouldn't mind. It's just it depends on the governor, and it's not something that she takes responsibility for in terms of an action that the city can take. And finally, Don Lane has proposed that there be campgrounds opened on county property. He was thinking of the county building, if I'm not misquoting him, which again is fine, but it doesn't commit him to do anything. But perhaps these new members will be able to have some impact on John Laird and Marty Wormhout, kind of the old-timers on the council, to actually come up with some kind of reasonable suggestions that can put us in a position where we don't need to continue the kind of massive demonstrations that we have been engaging in, and quite frankly, that I think will continue until there is some action taken. The weather has gotten nasty. It is raining out there, and people are getting soaked and wet. And even though there is a satellite shelter program that does provide for a certain number of beds each night for people who can get down to the across from the UPS yard, I think it's at 6:15 every night, and I urge people who are homeless and who can hear this to use these facilities if they want. People shouldn't be arrested for sleeping, and it's as simple as that. They shouldn't be ticketed for it, and they shouldn't be hassled for it. And I'm hoping that the City Council will take some action on it. But up to now, they have not listened to us at all. They have been unwilling to discuss it, and because of that, we've had to demonstrate.
We should acknowledge a particular positive thing that the City Council has done, which is the 14-bed River Street shelter, which has been put in, 10 beds of which are reserved for the mentally ill. That in itself is a positive thing. It was done after a great deal of organizing effort, etc. However, it is not an unmitigated positive thing. There are two negative drawbacks on it, at least, if not three. One is that achievement has been used oftentimes as a token to try staving off addressing the larger problem. 14 is not the number of homeless in Santa Cruz. I don't know the precise number, but it's probably around 1,500.
I think it's 2,000.
Well, okay, that's so we're certainly in a different kind of dimension than 14. Second, it has been organized in such a fashion, so as liberals have traditionally organized social service programs, so as to emphasize the delivery of salaries to those who would help those in need. At, and to give short shrift to the actual delivery of services to those in need. And that's, you know, I'm not even necessarily talking about whether the particular administrators have done a good or a bad job on the job, is that our priority must not be to create programs which are heavy with administrative costs and low on delivery of services. Some programs will necessarily be of that nature because of the specifics associated with them. And then the third issue is whether or not this kind of a program is going to be unduly restrictive for some of the cultural rights of people that would go through such a program. But I just also want to take issue with Robert Norris and one phrase he used, because I think it was an unfortunate understatement when he says he doesn't particularly support the homophobic attacks on John Laird. I know Robert Norris, actually another area of his activism in the past and even present in the past 102 campaign has been to speak out against homophobia, and I think he was not giving himself enough credit and speaking that he doesn't just not particularly support such action. He has been a strong advocate against homophobia. But the fact that the homeless do include, and those who speak out on behalf of the homeless do include homophobic personalities, and I'm sure it includes racists and all the other kinds of negatives that are associated with our culture, that cannot be used as an excuse to go ahead and support counter-bigotries that would go ahead and persecute this sector of the population. So, yes, we will, suffer our own personal embarrassments when somebody that we're supporting comes out with racism or homophobia or something like that, but we will not allow that as an excuse to stop the movement.
All right. Any callers who want to come call in, it's 429-4036. If you have a question or if you have a comment that you want to make, positive or negative, from, I suppose, the standpoint of the homeless or your own standpoint, whatever, you can dial in 429-4036. Right now we're going to take a short music break, and we'll be right back. Okay, once again, you're listening to Hearing Voices. I'm Dave, and we're talking about homeless rights. We have a caller that we'd like to get to right about now. Talk to us, please.
Hi.
Howdy.
I was homeless for over a year in a few different counties, and I've also been considered to be clinically depressed for like
Okay, we're having a tough time hearing you. Do you have a radio on?
No, I have a funny phone just at the speaker from the hearing. Is this any better?
Yeah.
Yeah, and I was clinically depressed. I still am. For that period of time. So it gives a perspective on what I'm saying. I used to sleep out in the woods behind in Santa Cruz quite a bit, around the railroad places, which were quiet and out of the way of things. And I found that really did quite a disservice to me. Now I'm a school teacher, and I got out of being homeless with the route of getting into treatment and then into hotels. And when I finally got myself together out of that, I got a place for myself and work. And I think that there should be effort put into getting people out of the homeless situation. A very serious thing is not getting them into hotels where everybody has this chances all the time. But is it something which could lead to some kind of self-realization of the person, whether it be as a poor person or whether it be as a that's what I wanted to say.
Okay, thank you for your comment. Okay, does anyone want to address that?
I don't know if somebody else wants to go first. Yeah, I'd like to address that by acknowledging that there are several contradictions in the kind of program that we put forth. And that doesn't mean that we're wrong, it just means that we have to be aware of that so that we can become coherent. On the one hand, we talk about the need of a person to be able to have a warm and comfortable place to sleep. And the logical end point of that argument is that there needs to be more of a housing program. We need to be able to get these folks indoors. And on the other hand, we say, as Charles did earlier, that people have the right to sleep where they want, and there's the Thoreau perspective, being able to go out and camp in the woods, and there's a whole romance involved in that. And in fact, it can be oppression if you do not permit it. And so that's sort of part of the back to nature part. And this is really, this movement that we're part of is really a conglomeration of both these kinds of urges, which go in contradictory directions. And I would like to emphasize that along with the acknowledgement that there's not a stereotype of a single homeless person. And incidentally, I would like, as an aside on that, to emphasize that most homeless people are not visible to us. Most of them are not hanging out on the mall. Most of them are, that's one of the reasons we cannot come up with a realistic head count of how many are mentally ill, et cetera, because we're only assessing those populations which tend to surface and we think of as being homeless. But so that for some of the homeless people, it is, please help me find a house so I can get on my feet, as apparently the last gentleman was really seeking, at least at some point in his development. And others are saying, please just get off my back. Let me go to the woods and do my thing in my own way, and I will make it environmentally constructive as I can. And so we have to address those as separate and distinct issues, even though they oftentimes get blurred in our rhetoric.
Okay. One of the, or several of the homeless activists from the Santa Cruz area, Kayvok Graybear, I talked to him last night, and he said that he was going up to Oregon, and I didn't get the full details of the story, if anyone wants to fill that in.
I don't know if his plans really have solidified there. I think that some of the homeless folks have been offered tents to use. Large tents have been donated, provided they can secure them, and I think that they were able to secure a vehicle today, a number of homeless activists, and they will be going to get these tents and possibly to bring them back here for use, possibly to use them there. I'm not too sure their plans have solidified. Graybear wasn't too definite about it when I talked to him. Louder. I'm kind of, to go back to another subject regarding the problem of human waste or people leaving trash and litter. Some of this is connected with city practices, like the failure to provide adequate public facilities, which we urged on the city council back in the summer, around the same time we presented the petition. And we found that, Mike Rodkin told us that there were 6 public toilets. We could only find 1 or 2. I don't think we could find any that were open at 24 hours a day. Watsonville has recently put in some public toilets to forestall the stinking out of the downtown area. I mean, European cities have public restrooms. It seems bizarre that, you know, this isn't the case here in Santa Cruz. And I don't know, I'm not familiar with the amount of money that's required as an investment, but it seems to me a worthy investment that the new city council would consider in public restrooms. Additionally, we're urging that as part of a homeless campground or campgrounds for places for people to park their vehicles and park away from the fears of people in their homes that they're going to be assaulted or robbed by homeless people, which, quite frankly, I think by and large is a false stereotype. I've never seen any figures that demonstrate that homeless people are more likely to be a crime problem in the sense of a burglary or assault problem than people who have homes and maybe who are professionals at the matter. And as for, I guess I'm making some broad comments here, but I think as for the drunk problem, which I regard as a problem, I don't like being accosted by people who are drunk. It is a real problem in this society. I mean, alcohol is the number one killer, and yet you have the city, county, state, and federal resources going primarily after cocaine, except, of course, where it's being used to fund the Contras, and other shock drugs. You have huge restrictions on constitutional liberties being justified by this recently passed national drug legislation to deal with what is essentially a minuscule problem regarding cocaine, LSD, marijuana, heroin, when the real problem is alcohol and tobacco. This also, incidentally, was mentioned in the petition for homeless rights. And I know this is a somewhat separate issue than the homeless, but the homeless get the brunt of this because they're out there, and they get the hassle from the police. Again, I'm primarily concerned with the sleeping ban and ending that in Santa Cruz. Sleeping ban does not mean people are allowed to litter, people are allowed to block the sidewalk. No, they're not allowed to sleep in the streets, and they're not allowed to, you know, to trash the area they're in. I would have no objection whatsoever to people who are littering, or even people who are sleeping in an area where there is litter present, be forced to take responsibility for that site. In fact, the current city council could pass a law which says anybody found in a trashed out campsite becomes responsible for that site. Thus, people who camp there could be encouraged to, in fact, clean up the sites that are currently dirty. And in fact, this summer, that's just what various campers did. There was a huge brouhaha that surfaced in the Santa Cruz Sentinel about campsites in the Pasatiempo area that were dirty because of many years of camping there, both by campers